Let's summarize the book thus far. You know, it really is beneficial. We won't do it here today, but if you have time, just read the book as a whole. I think sometimes when we study, we make studies like this, we have a tendency to kind of take one verse here and kind of isolate it, and then think about it, and we go from the next verse to the next verse, which is a profitable thing to do, and it's a way of studying that's beneficial. But at the same time, don't lose the bigger picture of the book. Remember, this is a letter written from Paul to this young man named Timothy. And there were things that Timothy needed to be aware of, things that Paul was concerned about with respect to the things that Timothy was going to face. He wasn't going to be with Timothy much longer. Timothy was going to be sent out as a preacher to deal with all sorts of people and things that were going on in the world that he was going to face, and all those pressures of ungodliness and false doctrine that he was going to have to face and deal with, and Paul was concerned about that. And it's good just to kind of look at the book as a whole and think about what the thing, if you see those recurring themes, things that he's thinking of. And if you look in 1 Timothy as well as 2 Timothy, you see that. As we would be as with any young person. I've got one about to go off to Auburn, and I know some others do too, and I know what that environment's like and the pressures that you can face from ungodliness that abides in any big college campus like that. And I worry about him, and I've been telling him some things with respect to what you need to be aware of, and I'm telling him some more things before he goes in the next 2 weeks. And I know some of you will do the same thing, and not just Auburn, but any time a child goes off on their own like that, whether it be to work somewhere or whatever, we would be concerned about him. He is concerned about Timothy. Let's summarize this book as we've seen it thus far. Paul was regularly thanking God for Timothy. He prayed for Timothy because Timothy was one that he could count on. He was happy about Timothy's faith, and there were reasons for that faith because of his mother and grandmother. He told Timothy, don't be ashamed of the testimony of the Lord, nor Paul's chains. And he reminds him of Jesus appearing, abolishing death, bringing life, calling us to be saved. That's what's really important in life to remember. There's a lot of the goals we can pursue. Don't forget, being saved is what it's all about. Being saved is what it's all about, and God put forth this plan that we can live forever. We don't have to worry about death, that we can live forever. Paul suffered and was not ashamed because he was convinced that God was going to be able to guard what had been committed to Paul, or what Paul committed to him, depending on the version that you read. Sound words. Keep the pattern of sound words. That's a recurring theme. That scene, soundness of doctrine, soundness of character, soundness of actions are recurring themes in 1 and 2 Timothy. Soundness, solidness. We know we get that from the Scripture. Flee youthful lust. Now, the thing we were just talking about, there are things, particularly in youth, that probably are harder to deal with because of the fact that they're getting off on their own and they're meeting different people from different places that they're exposed to, maybe for the first time. He reminds him, flee youthful lust. And he mentioned, I don't have it listed here, he mentioned some who in Asia had turned away from him. And he was obviously disappointed with that. But Onesiphorus wasn't ashamed of Paul. He earnestly sought him out. He refreshed him often. Be strong. Endure hardship. Remain disciplined. Be diligent to present yourself as an approved worker of God. I think some versions say study to show yourself an approved worker of God. Stay away from profane and idle talk because of the ungodliness that kind of thing promotes. Again, this is just regular, common sense things for us to remember. God's foundation stands. The Lord knows who is His. And I think you studied last Wednesday night. I wasn't able to hear all of it. But just as a house has vessels that are worth more than others, depending on how they're used, and particularly in that day and age, that would have been the case. All kinds of pots for all kinds of different things, right? Well, there are various levels of faithfulness among Christians as well. And God here tells us, if you want to be a value, a vessel of value, cleanse yourself. Cleanse yourself. And then finally, avoid foolish disputes. Don't quarrel, but be humble when correcting others. I was able to listen to that part. I know Tim was going over that idea of being very careful of how we address others. We're not trying to win an argument, but we're literally trying to bring someone to God. That's our purpose. All right, let's get into the book this morning. Let's read. What I'd like to do is just actually read it, the first 9 verses. This warning, these are perilous times that are about to happen that Paul is warning Timothy about. But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And from such people turn away. For of this sort are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded down with sins, led away by various lusts, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now as Jannes and Jambres resisted Moses, so do these also resist the truth, men of corrupt minds, disapproved concerning the faith. But they will progress no further, for their folly will be manifest to all, as theirs also was. The thing I want you to notice is we're going to look at each one of these verses and each one of these descriptions here of these various sins. I want you to notice something that it says. I know it's there and I just can't see it. Having a form of godliness is what I'm trying to say. Verse 5. It's amazing how you look at this, I don't know how many times, and you can't see it when you try to find it. Having a form of godliness. These are people who in some ways, or in some aspects, appear to be godly, or maybe make a pretense of godliness. And yet, I don't believe one person probably embodies every one of these things. This is just a general description of various type of things that people are going to get involved in, things that he's going to have to deal with. And because it says, of this sort, verse 6, of this sort. So this is a general list of people, but it doesn't mean it's an exhaustive list. People like this, who seem to be religious, but are not. So let's go back up now. Let's just look at each verse now as we look at the various verses, beginning with verse 1. But know this literally means be knowing, this be knowing, be keeping this in your mind, is what he's saying here. Now this list of sinners is very similar to other lists that we see in other places of the Bible. Romans 1:29-32 is a very long list there of people describing the Gentile nation and the depravity that they reached when they abandoned God. When they refused to acknowledge the true God and started making God into other things. That's what people get into. That's the depths of sin you can reach when you do that, when you go down that road and start ignoring God. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 9 through 10 is a list of the things that some Corinthians had been involved in, but had come out of, fortunately. And then Galatians 5 also mentions a list as well, and perhaps there are other lists, but these are similar lists. There's various places in the Bible where lists of sins are given, and this is one that we're about to look at today. What do we mean by the last days? It's up there, right? Turn over to Joel. I'll tell you what. Instead of turning over to Joel, I'm going to tell you that it's there. Go over to Acts. Because Acts pretty much quotes, almost verbatim, the book of Joel, chapter 2. Well, Acts 2 also quotes it as well. This is the day of Pentecost, right? And this is the time in which they were all in one place and a miraculous outpouring of the Holy Spirit occurred. And there were questions about that, what's going on, and people were able to hear in their own language and they were amazed. Some accused them of being drunk, yet there were people from all sorts of places, many different nations represented there today. So this was a miraculous event that happened. I want you to look at verse 17 or verse 16. This is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. Verse 17, it shall come to pass in the last days, says God, I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Young men shall see visions, old men shall dream dreams, and on my men servants and on my maid servants. I will pour out my spirit in those last days. Now, this is a prophetic type of, this is a figurative prophetic type of event that's happening. Blood and fire and vapor of smoke, verse 19. Sun shall be turned to darkness. Sounds like an incredible day. I mean, if you read that from way back and not really understanding what God really intends, you would think, boy, this is a day to see. This would be a terrifying day. What we learn from this passage is that this was figurative. That what is being described in Joel is actually taking place on that day of Pentecost in Acts. The thing I want you to notice is that it shall come to pass in the last days. Think about that phrase, last days. Let's go over to Hebrews, the first chapter. So we know that event occurred. We know that Joel said it was going to be in the last days. Therefore, the day of Pentecost was the last day, right? Go over to Hebrews. Hebrews 1 and verse 2. God, verse 1, who at various times and in various ways spoke in times past to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by His Son. There's that phrase, last days again. Over to 1 Timothy 4. Now that same, we have a similar warning. You know, Paul is continuing to warn Timothy about different things. Well, in this case, he's warning Timothy about false teachings that are about to happen. And the people who teach those things and teach them without any conscience at all. But look at what it says there in verse 1. Now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times, and some versions may say last days, some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines and demons and so on. Again, there's that phrase, last days. There is a tendency on the part of many to take that phrase and try to make it something that it really doesn't mean. What it really means is the last days began on the day of Pentecost back in Acts 2, and they're going to extend all the way until Christ returns. That's really what's being talked about here. And I think most of you probably are aware of that, but I did want to point that out for the purpose of our study. Perilous times will come. Let's go back over to 2 Timothy now. These are hard to bear times, grievous times, times of difficulty. Now, that might depend on the perspective that you look at things. For some, it may not have been very perilous. It might have been a good time had by all. Fun and frolic. Right? Pleasure. But for someone who is trying to live godly, it was not going to be an easy time. It was going to be a perilous time. Men will be lovers of themselves. The Greek word here for lover is from the word phallos. I think most of you probably recognize that word. You remember in the Greek language, they had different words for love. We use the word love in a very, in many, English language in particular, one word may stand for many different things. They say that's one reason it's so hard for people to learn it. Well, Greek used several different words for love. One of which was phallos. It was an affectionate type of love. Sometimes called brotherly love. City of Philadelphia is called the city of brotherly love. It's an affectionate type of love. It is not, there was another type of love, and I can't remember what it was, the one I should have written it down, that meant a love from a standpoint of duty. That's not the word that's used here. It meant affection. Turn over to Matthew, the 16th chapter. One of the things that God demands of us, that Jesus demands of us to be servants of His, is that we deny ourselves. Verse 24, Jesus said to His disciples, if anyone desires to come after Me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow Me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for My sake will find it. And then He goes on to say, even if you gain the whole world, it won't be worth it. Deny ourselves. These are people who were not denying themselves, but they were seeking their own interests, lovers of themselves. Selfishness is the root of many sins. Many sins, because there are things that we want, we think we ought to have, and that leads us into ungodliness. Lovers of money. Go back over to 2 Timothy now. You know, one thing I've noticed, and I think many probably you have noticed as well, the Bible does not condemn being rich. The Bible condemns our attitudes towards money, our bad attitudes towards money, lovers of money. The Greek word here, you see that same word that we just talked about, philos, an affection. And the word here for silver, if you ever took any chemistry class, you'll know that silver, the chemical symbol for silver is Ag. It comes from that same Greek word, or same Latin word that's similar to the Greek word, argos. You can almost see that Ag in there. That caught my attention when I saw that. So it's a lover of silver, lover of money is the idea here. Turn back over to 1 Timothy. Paul has already warned Timothy about this kind of thing. Perhaps he realizes that Timothy is going to be faced with that. Maybe he realizes that maybe that's something that Timothy is going to have to really be careful about. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9. But those who desire to be rich, remember, desire to be rich, fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in perdition. Destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith and their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Look at verse 17 in the same chapter. Command those who to be rich, who are rich to be in this present age, not to be haughty, not to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly things, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. And it mentions things that they are all to do with those, with the money that they have. Go over to Matthew, the 6th chapter. Verse 19. Don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust and destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where you don't have to worry about something happening back there. We spend all our time trying to accumulate earthly wealth. When we're dead, somebody else is going to have it. It's not going to last. And it may not even last our lifetime. Put your treasure on something that's really worth it, is what he's saying. But there will be people who love money. Again, these are people who profess godliness, who have a pretense of godliness, who are exhibiting these things. Go back to 2 Timothy. Boasters. And I'm looking at the New King James. I think most of you use the New King James. I like to look at a lot of different versions sometimes when I study. And I would encourage you to do that as well. But I'm using the New King James. Boasters. The word for boaster here, it's from a Greek word that means an empty pretender. People who make false claims of power or ability of something they really don't have. Look over to Romans, the 12th chapter. Let me catch your charts up. Sorry about that. Verse 3 of Romans 12. For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but think soberly as God has dealt with each other. So a person who is not, and that this verse also blends in with the next one that's listed there as well. In fact, let's just go on to that. The idea of being proud is the next word that's listed here. This is one who shows himself or herself above others. There's a haughtiness associated with this attitude, an arrogant attitude. The verse that we just read fits in well. If you look down to verse 16 as well, be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Don't be wise in your own opinion. So this idea of being a boaster and proud is very closely related. Go over to Philippians, the second chapter. Verse 2. Be like-minded, have the same love, be of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you not look out for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. And then it even goes and talks about how humble Christ was. So the idea we need to esteem others better than ourselves is the attitude that we're to have. Let's go on to the next one. Blasphemers. I think most of us know what a blasphemer is. And apparently our word for blasphemer was transliterated from the Greek word blasphemos. Railer. I think some of your versions will even use the word railer there. Speaking evil, slanderous, abusive speech against God or man. Disobedient to parents. I think most of us are familiar with the verse in Ephesians, the 6th chapter. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then it talks about honoring father and mother. So there is a command of God to obey parents. You notice, and we won't turn over there and look at it, but Deuteronomy, the 18th chapter, if a parent had a rebellious child, a rebellious, disobedient child, the penalty was death. It was one of the most serious offenses you could have. I mean, you did that and you were to be taken out and stoned. And one thing I thought about as we're thinking about this, Proverbs, the 23rd chapter. Parents have a responsibility to make their children mind them, and to raise them in such a way that they will respect them. Turn over to Proverbs, the 23rd chapter. Verse 13. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. Now, Proverbs are general statements of truth. They're not intended to apply and say, because if you take a rod and beat him long enough and hard enough, you can kill a person that way. That's not what that's saying. It's not talking about the exceptions. It's talking about the general rule applied in a consistent way as God would have it. If you discipline a child and spank him or her, as the case may be, when they need it, they'll grow up to love you and respect you. I know. People talk about, well, I only had two or three spankings when I was a child. People can say that. I'm thinking, I may have gotten two or three in one day, but I don't resent it. I love my parents as much as anybody. I don't resent it. I'm glad they did it now. Didn't like it at the time, but I'm glad they did it now. So keep that in mind. One reason people become disobedient parents is because they're not disciplined. Unthankful. Now we're going back to 2 Timothy. I think we know what unthankful means, right? And I think that might be closely associated with being disobedient parents. We live in a world where people who aren't thankful. I'll tell you, if you look at a lot of Paul's letters, I know the last time I was in here teaching, I kept noticing that idea of thankfulness showing up. Thankfulness, thankfulness, thankfulness. That could be a great motivation for us. Think about what God has done for us. Think about where we would be without God. Who would you be if you didn't have God in your life right now? You're not going to be absent of problems. If you can have peace with God and know that whatever happens to you physically, financially, relationship-wise, if you're right with God, you have hope of living forever. And we need to be thankful. Unholy. This is someone who is pretty much irreligious in some ways. But you know, think about that. Here's a person who's irreligious, but yet we've already noticed at the end of this list, it says they have a pretense or they have an appearance of godliness. This is really a person who is very hypocritical in their actions. They may not actually be religious at all. This would be someone who would be fairly wicked. Impious as well. Without natural affection. Now, a lot of times when you see that phrase, when I used to look at that phrase, and especially in the context of Romans 1, and thinking about the depravity that many people had reached there, I automatically assumed that it had to do with the people involved in homosexuality. The Bible clearly condemns that practice, but I don't believe that's really what's being talked about here. This is a type of affection that is normally, it's a combination Greek word. It has that little a and I don't know how to pronounce it, storgos. But storgos refers to a love, a natural love between parents and children and husbands and wives. That kind of love. And these are people who didn't have that. We're living in a society now, if you just watch the news, there are people who don't care a thing about their kids. Not a thing. And that's indicative of what he's being taught, about what's being talked about here. People who don't love their family like they should. Again, these are people who have a profession, who profess godliness, who profess to be godly, yet they don't really have natural affection. Again, the Bible's very clear about people involved in sexual sin, like homosexuality. It is a sin. It always has been a sin. But I don't think that particular phrase applies directly to that. Perhaps indirectly, but not directly. And I've got unholy there again. You know, when you do these charts, you'll take one and you'll duplicate it and you'll modify it. And you're supposed to take out the stuff that was in the previous chart. And I've forgotten to take unholy out here. So again, you'll see that again. But the next word here in the New King James is unforgiving. In other versions, you'll see a little bit different word here. Truce breakers are implacable, irreconcilable. This is from a Greek word that means someone who won't abide by a treaty or an agreement. They won't live up to their word. They'll say they're going to do something and they won't, is the idea here. Again, I think we know people like that. I'm doing a lot of talking. If somebody wants to jump in, just say something. I'm not looking up as like I should. Yeah, Freddie points out, for those of you who couldn't hear, this is the problem in marriage. People enter into a marriage and they think that, I think they have a false idea of what marriage is really like. They don't understand the commitment that one makes. And I saw somebody post on social media one time that this guy was talking to someone else, and he didn't agree with it, but he said something to the effect that their friends didn't believe in marriage anymore because they couldn't really get what they wanted out of marriage. I think they had a totally false idea of what marriage is about. And marriage is a commitment. It is an agreement. It is a decision to live and love someone. It is a decision that you make. And Freddie's right. People who don't abide by that, I think, would fall into this category of being those who won't live up to an agreement. They made a decision. They made an agreement to marry someone, and yet they go back on it because it's not fulfilling. Bible, they definitely, I think, condemn that kind of thing. The next word here, it depends on your versions, without self-control. Wait a minute. Oh, I skipped one, didn't I? Slanderers. Sorry about that. Yeah, slanderers is our next one. There we go. This is from the Greek word, ever hear the word diabolical? The word diabolical actually has to do, it links it to the devil himself. I didn't realize that until I looked that up. But diabolical actually implies being associated with the devil. You can see that in this Greek word. This is a person who, for the purpose of damaging another person's reputation, reports things. Generally, it would be false things, but one commentator said that it would include truth that's not really needed to be told. It's unnecessarily circulated. Not everything you know has to be told. And someone might have done something that they're ashamed of and have repented of it, and yet someone's still circulating it for the purpose of damaging their reputation. This is a slanderer. Or false accuser. Of course, if someone's circulating something that is false, that would also be wrong. Again, we need to think about those kind of things. All of us do. All of these things. Without self-control. Again, depending on the word depending on the version of the Bible that you use, you'll see different words used there. This literally means without power. But this is without power to control yourself. And it would definitely include those who refuse to control their sexual desires, but it wouldn't necessarily be limited to that. Perhaps your appetite for money, failure to control your tongue, failure to resist worldly pleasures. You just can't seem to control. People can't seem to control those kind of desires. Brutal or fierce is the next word here. This is someone who's not tame, savage. And again, I did something else. I did their thing I just mentioned a minute ago. I've got something from the other chart there. I looked at these charts, I don't know how many times, and I didn't catch this. I'm sorry. This is a person who is savage, fierce in the way that they act. Despisers of those who are good. It literally means not fond of those which is good. One of the qualifications for elders is one who is a lover of good or good people, good things. Traitors is the next word. This is a person who, when it's to their advantage, are going to betray a person, perhaps a friend, perhaps it's in a sense of where I work. I don't deal with a lot of secret things. Very rarely do I ever. But I guess there are people that do, because where I work with the Arsenal. And there's posters all over the walls of people who have been traitors. They'll use all kinds of adjectives. Traitor, thief, all sorts of things. And it's there to serve as a warning to those of us who work there not to divulge secrets that would hurt our government. And a person who would do that, and there are from time to time people, again, because they want to gain an advantage, usually it's monetary. They want to earn money from a foreign source, and they're just desperate for money, and they'll divulge secrets that it would be damaging to our government. But again, it could also be on a personal level. A person who goes behind someone's back that maybe they trust, and they're reporting information, again, for their own advantage. That's a traitor. And that's the word that's used here. It's used of Judas in Luke 16, and from those who betrayed Christ, who were responsible for his death. It's used there in Acts 7:52. Again, this is not to be something that a Christian ought to do. These are all character flaws of people. Headstrong. This is a person who is reckless and obstinate. This is somebody who's going to have his way no matter what. Most of us are pretty familiar with that verse, right? Sometimes we'll hear someone describe, "Boy, he's headstrong," or "I'm headstrong." And it implies someone who lets their emotions get involved, their own passions and their bias that causes them to want to have their way. And they're going to pursue their own agenda very obstinately. Haughty is the next word that's listed. This literally means to raise a smoke or to wrap in a mist. Now, you look at that, and I look at that, I go, that doesn't tell me a lot, right? But it's used metaphorically of self-constraint and or pride, puffed up, conceited, high-minded. Turn over to 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter. Verse 3, if anyone teaches otherwise, doesn't consent to wholesome words, or even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the doctrine of which accords with godliness. There's that word godliness again. He is proud, knowing nothing. He's obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which come envy, strife, reviling, evils, evil suspicions, useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds, destitute of the truth. Again, this is a haughty attitude. And that word for haughty is often translated puffed up in some versions of 1 Corinthians. You'll see that word, that phrase over and over, puffed up. Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. This would include sensual pleasures, obviously. But I don't think it would necessarily be wouldn't be limited to that. People who are involved in just regular pleasures of the world, who are just all they study is going somewhere and having a good time, then that's really what describes them. They're not really one who is going to. They're the kind of person if you say let's go to a party, they're going to be first in line. But if you say let's go to a Bible study or singing, they are probably not going to be interested because they pursue pleasure. The book of Hebrews refers to Moses as one who forsook the pleasures of sin. He could have lived a fabulous life as a child of Pharaoh's daughter. Instead, he chose to suffer with the people of God. He did not want to pursue the pleasures of sin. Having a form of godliness but denying its power. Again, the idea here is the outward form or image looks like this is someone who is godly. Godliness refers to reverence and respect for God and His will. So this refers to people who are making an outward profession, but they don't allow the power of God to really change their lives. If you look at social media, and there's different forms of it now. One in particular is called Instagram. I don't even know if you know what that is. That's a picture-based social media site where a person puts a picture of themselves and they'll put a little phrase about whatever, who they are. A lot of people put Bible verses. Very, very good to see that. And they'll put all these pictures of themselves and people will comment. What's amazing to me is that a person will put a Bible verse and then they'll put pictures of themselves and very immodest dress, very ungodly attire, bikinis even. And I'm talking about some in conservative churches in this county, people who are doing that. They have a form of godliness, but they're denying God's power. And they'll put a Bible verse, I don't remember specifically, somebody put a Bible verse and then have themselves in a bikini. But that's the kind of thing that's going on. And they're not letting God really change their lives when they do that. Parents would do well to take a look at what their children are liking on that particular site, because some Christians are liking some things that they shouldn't be liking. And it worries me greatly. But it's something I have to deal with in my family as well. I have to police that pretty good. And I've had some things to say about that in my own house about it. And it's something I have to watch myself. So anyway, whatever that's worth. From such, turn away. Now this possibly, every commentator that I read, and I didn't read too many, but they seem to think this is a reference to withdrawal. What was the situation going on in 1 Corinthians 5? Yeah, a man was living with his stepmother in a state of fornication, and the church there wasn't doing anything about it. And Paul told him to do what? Withdraw from such a person who's walking like doing that. 2 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter, speaks of withdrawing from someone who's walking out of order. And when the church is failed to administer discipline, the passage there in 1 Corinthians 6 says a little leaven leavens the whole lump. When things are allowed to continue and not dealt with, it's going to start permeating into other people's lives. It's like yeast in a dough that's mixed in. The whole bread's going to rise. From such, turn away. I think this could also refer, possibly, to 1 Corinthians 15:33 tells us, don't be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals or ruins good morals. And if you hang around, if we hang around people who are involved in these kind of things, they're going to have their influence on us. We can't run with people who participate in various ungodly things and not be impacted. Again, going back to what I was mentioning a minute ago, that kind of thing concerns me. I'm way behind here. For those of these sort are made captive of gullible or silly women. These are women who are very little in terms of their spiritual strength and their character. They're very easily influenced. These are people who would be loaded down with sins and very easily influenced by others. Perhaps they would be loaded down with guilt and they found someone who's going to make them feel better about themselves. So they're listening to them. They're always trying to learn, but they never really come to a knowledge of the truth. It mentions here Jannes and Jambres. Those aren't really listed in the Old Testament. There's a question about who they're really talking about there. But instead, but the idea here is really there's a Jewish tradition that associates them with the magicians who were from Egypt in Exodus, the 7th chapter. that they resisted Moses. And apparently this would have been known to Timothy and to Paul because he names them. And so they would have accepted that legend as being true, possibly. It says they are reprobate or disapproved concerning the faith. This idea is being rejected after having been tested for approval. They will progress no further. They won't get very far. Their folly will be plain to all, as was theirs. And again, that's going back to the Jannes and Jambres, these magicians. Truth always wins. May not appear to be the case, but truth will always win. Any question? I know I hurried through the last little section. I appreciate your good attention. Thank you.